The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 809. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about a citadel, a bazaar, hospitality, and a prison, Nowruz and Yazidism, as we go to Kurdistan in northern Iraq. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about northern Iraq. I'd like to welcome to the show Mansura Farahani, who's coming to us from Travel with Mansura. And if you don't know how to spell that, just check the show notes because I've got a link to that, who has come to talk to us about Kurdistan. Mansura, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
And let's put Kurdistan on a map, because if people are thinking of country names, there isn't one named Kurdistan. So where are we talking about?
Kurdistan actually is an autonomous region in Iraq, and they have their own government, and also they have their own flag. And if you want to travel to Kurdistan, you need the Kurdistan visa, not Iraqi visa. And that's why when you talk to Kurdish people, usually they refer to them as a country, but it's not a country.
Okay, and we're talking about northern Iraq.
Yes, northern Iraq, yeah.
Okay, excellent. First of all, what's your connection with Kurdistan?
I don't have any connection specifically, but I like to go to the places that I call it hidden gem or off-beaten path that no one goes, and to see people and meet new people and also different culture. I am interested in different culture and food, definitely. And I'm originally from Iran. Iran has Kurdish people, like Iran, Turkey, Syria, and Iraq. There are four countries that they have Kurdish people. But the place that they have government Kurdish people is in Kurdistan, in Iraq. And they have connection with Kurdish people in these three other countries.
And where you're from in Iran, were you from one of those regions that had Kurdish people?
No, I'm Persian. Okay. I'm from the capital, Tehran.
That's what I guessed, but okay.
Yeah, no, I don't have any connection. And I don't speak Kurdish. And my language is Persian and Farsi. And no, just so you know, I met a lot of Kurdish people when I was in Iran. And I know they are so friendly people.
Got it. And why should someone go to Kurdistan?
So many reasons. If people are interested in culture, definitely they should travel to Kurdistan. If they love good food, not good for vegetarian or vegans, but if you are meat eater, you definitely need to go to Middle East and Kurdistan. They have so many delicious food. And if you want to meet new people and you want to make friends, Kurdish people are the best. You feel like you are so welcome there. And also history. The region has a long history and rich history. And they have different religions. And also, they have a lot of history about Christianity, Islam, and also Yazidi. Different religions also there are in Kurdistan.
Excellent. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
I would say always go to the big city. I know many people that say, oh, you are saying that you are interested in hidden gems. Why are you suggesting to go to the big city? Because it's a good start. And also, usually, it's easier to get to. And first, you get yourself familiar with the culture of the modern life in that country or that part of the world. I would say that if you're traveling to Kurdistan, the easiest way to get is to take a flight from Istanbul to Erbil, and which is the capital of Kurdistan. I wouldn't say it's a big city, but it has shops, old bazaar, if you are familiar with Middle Eastern bazaar, mm-hmm. and citadel, a really old citadel, and also lots of restaurants. Now I think I mentioned a lot of things about food, but it's so important because I think if you want to know any culture, you should eat their food. All food comes with the history.
And whether it's a big city or not depends on where you're from. It's over 1 million people. So if you're from China, it's a small town. If you're from somewhere else like US, it's a city.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That I think it's when we are talking about Kurdistan, Erbil is one of the biggest city in Kurdistan. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying, and it has an airport. So we can count it as a big city in Kurdistan.
And what are we going to do in Erbil?
In Erbil, the best thing to see is the bazaar. It's a traditional mm-hmm. bazaar that they sell lots of different things, traditional Kurdish dresses that they are really nice, colorful, and also like different food, I would say. Like it's a dry fruit, nuts. They are so common in Kurdistan. And also you can find them in Erbil. Apart from the bazaar, you need to go to the citadel, which is one of the oldest citadel in that region. And apart from that, there is a big mosque, and you can visit that mosque too.
Let's go into a little more detail there. So we're going to the citadel, and the citadel, the old fortress. Do you happen to know who built it or how old it is?
I can say about Erbil is one of the oldest cities in the region too. It dates back to at least 6,000 years ago. And okay. Of course, that you can find the citadel in the center of Erbil, which is one of the oldest monuments in Iraq.
And it looks like it dates back to the Assyrians, and you don't hear them mentioned that much, so BC.
Yes.
Are we doing a tour when we do the citadel, or is it self-guided, or how does that work?
The citadel is actually free to visit it, but there are a few museums, but they're really cheap. Like, I think $2 you can pay for each museum, and you can go and visit them. One of them is like a museum of carpet, another one the rock museum, because this citadel has been inhabited by Persians, Greek, Mongols, and Ottomans. And you can imagine, like, throughout the time, they changed the citadel all the time.
Sure. Certainly. Yeah, the technology of whatever century BC is not the same as whatever the Ottomans would have had later on.
Yes, that's
true. And you say carpet. Good Persian carpets, I assume, would come from here.
The Persian carpet, mostly they come from Iran. And also if you find it in Kurdistan, and there are many shops that you can purchase them, but they bring it from Iran, mostly from Tabriz and other part. But yes, you can find a good carpet. But after exploring Erbil, I would say that try to go to other part of Kurdistan, because Kurdistan has so many different parts and with different also culture. Okay. I traveled to the north. Dohuk is another city. It's a mountainous city, has a lake. It's good there to explore the natural part of Kurdistan. And from Dohuk, there is another...
Hang on a second.
Sorry.
Slow down. So when we're in Dohuk, then you say Dohuk, we're exploring the natural things. So how are we doing that? Are we doing hikes to the nearby hills? Are we doing tours? How do you recommend we explore that?
One of the easiest way to go around Kurdistan is to get a taxi. Taking a taxi usually is not expensive as in the US or in Europe. And usually there are some taxis that are called share taxi. Yeah. Basically, they have a fixed price, like per person. You don't want to share the taxi with others because they have the fixed price. You can pay for all four people, and that's going to be your private taxi. And there is another way for some other places that you can just rent a taxi for a day. And also, that wouldn't cost you a lot. It's, I would say, around $50 to $80. It depends on the distance you are going to cover.
Okay. And the likelihood that I'm going to get a taxi driver who understands me is what?
To be honest, that's tricky, but you get, because they don't speak English.
No, I wouldn't think so. Why should they?
They didn't speak English when I was there. Mm-hmm. Also, in some part. I thought that my Persian language would help, but it didn't. But sure. with some body language and showing the money or mm-hmm. some of the thing, that we could just fix them.
Did you write down the places that you wanted to go or show it on a map? Or how did you communicate that to your taxi driver?
The name of the places, usually they know. I knew where I wanted to go. And that's why it was easy. For example, when I was in it, they call it a garage, which is the terminal for share taxi. And yeah. I went there and I said, okay, I want to go to Dohuk. And okay, this is the price I have to pay. Okay, I just want, for example, the back seat for myself and I pay for others. That was easy because they know what you're talking about. It's about the money. And actually, right. if now you're asking, I'm thinking, how did I deal without knowing the language?
This is why I ask. Okay.
Yeah, but when you are there, because the taxi driver knows that what you are talking about, and you are saying Dohuk, and I'm saying Dohuk, and okay, the next part is about negotiating the price, and usually the price is fixed, and you don't need to negotiate, unless, as I said, you want to get the private taxi. But also for that, I got one private taxi for the whole day to go to different places. And mm-hmm. actually, I negotiated a bargain for that. First, they said $80, and they showed me $80. And I was like, no. At the end, I paid $50. To be honest, I don't know how I did it. But I think, as I said, it's about money. And you show them money, you show your finger and said, no, 80 is too much. And then you say 50. I hope this makes sense.
That does. It's sure. No, good bargaining skills are always a good thing, and especially in that part of the world. So you're doing, and when you talk about a shared taxi, you're doing a multi-hour shared taxi drive to go from Erbil all the way up to Dohuk. And then you're actually then you actually rented one for a day to do sightseeing, not with a guide. So you knew where you wanted to go and what you wanted to see at that point.
Yes, I didn't have a guide, but I mm-hmm. recommend if you are going to Kurdistan to have a guide. That helps a lot. Most of the tour guides, they speak English in Kurdistan. Okay. And actually in Erbil, I met one of the tour guides and he joined me and he showed me around. And actually some of the tea houses in Erbil, they are really pretty and they're traditional. And it's good to go with the tour guide. Otherwise, I wouldn't
have known where to go.
Explore okay. them or discover them, sure. you know what mm-hmm. I mean. And yes. But if I want to go back again, and I would like to go back again, but this time I get the tour guide, at least for a few places.
Okay. And the other question I had is, you said that it's documented like how much it's going to cost to get from one place to another. But as it's written down, is it written down in characters that I would understand? Because they don't use Latin characters by default.
No,
Kurdistan.
They don't. And right. also, it's not written down. They tell you.
It's not written down? Okay. All right.
No, there is nothing written down. Everything is verbal conversation or verbal Got agreement. It. That's it.
Okay. All right. Good to know. And yes, I think we promised people this was going to be an adventurous trip, so none of this is a problem. People just need to know that this is the level of adventure they have to be willing to have to do this trip. That's okay.
I would say one thing that helps. For me, that helps because I know how to read Arabic.
That's what I wondered. Yeah.
Even though I don't speak Arabic, but I can read the alphabet and I can get mm-hmm. the idea. But I've seen so many travelers, they couldn't, but still they could travel around. And actually, they went around more than me. So I think that's an adventure, but you can still take it and have fun.
Right. And Erbil, you mentioned going up to the hill. So Erbil is down in the Tigris-Euphrates plains, in between the rivers there, as I recall. And then you're heading up to the mountains of northern Iraq, northern Kurdistan. And then you mentioned getting access to the nature. Did you get out and do hiking, or what did you do when you were there?
I said that Dohuk could be another base, good yep. base for people they want to explore the north. I didn't do a big hike. I didn't okay. have time for the big hike, but I did a bit of hiking a day, like half a day. And actually, we went to a dam and we just strolled around the dam. And there was a lake, but I needed to get a taxi to go to the lake, and I couldn't walk from the city in Dohuk. But at the time,
is this that big lake on the Tigris River that's quite large?
I think so. Okay. Yes. And the problem was, when I was there, it was a Nowruz holiday, New Year's holiday. A lot of roads were closed because most of the Kurdish people, they go to nature to celebrate the New Year for 3 or 4 days. And that's why some of the roads get so crowded and some of the taxi don't go there. It's a great time to go there and see the celebration, but to explore in the region is not a great time because
went there intentionally, was my understanding, for the holiday.
Yes, I went there because Nowruz holiday. Yeah, I wanted to record and make a documentary about the Nowruz celebration in Kurdistan.
And we'll put a link. You've got multiple videos on your YouTube channel that we'll put a link to so people can learn more about that. But tell us a little more. So first of all, you say it's New Year celebration. Are we talking New Year celebration like January 1st? Or are we talking New Year celebration like a lunar New Year, or...
It's a solar New Year, but it's a Nowruz New Year. It's an ancient New Year, and many countries, including Iraq, Iran, some part of Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, and I think more countries, they celebrate Nowruz. More than 300 million people in the world, they celebrate Nowruz, and that's why it's really important. And I grew up in Iran, and for me, Nowruz is important. Like before moving to the UK, I didn't really celebrate this New Year in January because we don't celebrate it. We have this different calendar. And the calendar is...
And all over the world, people haven't always celebrated January 1st. So when is a holiday?
Nowruz start or new... Nowruz means new day, which is the New Year. It start at the beginning of spring every year. Yeah.
That would have been my guess if it wasn't January 1st, because that's when New Year's used to be for many European countries as well. Okay. So you celebrate it quite often by going in northern Iraq and Kurdistan by going out to nature, because it's spring. It's the start of new life. Okay. I'm catching on.
The celebration of Nowruz starts in the capital of Nowruz in Kurdistan, which is Acre. It's another ancient city. People like young, young boys and girls, they go to the mountain, lit the torch, and when it gets dark, they bring the torch down to the city. And this celebration is so nice. They go to 3 different mountains, and people, they gather and see them, and they dance, which is Kurdish dance usually. And that's why it's really nice to see them. Because, as I said, Nowruz is an ancient celebration. And in ancient faith of... I don't know exactly which religion is Nowruz from, or it's not maybe Mithraic religion. And the light, the darkness is the evil. And that's why they lit the torch, which is fighting against the dark. And that's why it's so nice to see that celebration.
Got it. So the celebration starts still when it is dark, early morning.
Yes, exactly. Exactly the sunset. Yeah. People gather in the morning. When the sun sets, people start coming down the hill with the torch.
Okay, excellent. And you were up in the north when it was New Year's then?
Yes, I was there exactly in Acre to see. And actually, I was in one of the locals' rooftop to see the event.
And Acre, we're talking about Akre, is the, how do I spell it?
Got it.
One of the oldest continuously inhabited cities in the world. You said old. Okay.
Yes. I think I said ancient.
Yep. You nailed it there. Okay. Excellent. Did you want to mention anything else about Acre, as long as we're talking about that? You're celebrating the New Year's there. Are you doing anything else while you're there?
Not. Acre is, in general, apart from the Nowruz, is also, as you mentioned, is one of the oldest city in the world. It's worth to visit, even if it's not the Nowruz celebration. But Nowruz celebration is something very unique. It doesn't happen in any other places, even in the country like Iran that celebrate Nowruz. It doesn't happen like that. That's why I think it's so unique, that celebration, and it's worth to visit it. And it's been like that for centuries.
Okay. And so this is another hill country city.
Yes. And in Acre, there are not many hotels or guest houses. And okay. That's why Dohuk, which I mentioned earlier, that when you go to Dohuk in the north, Dohuk can be a good base to explore the north. For example, going to Acre, going to Lalish, or other places. And Lalish also is famous because its temples, which is the temples, is the Lalish is a holy place for Yazidis. And it's another old city, for, I think, dates back to 4,000 years ago.
And sorry, you said it's a holy city for, and then you used a word that I didn't catch.
Yazidis.
Okay, and I need a little more explanation.
Yazidis are another religion. They are okay. Believing Yazidism. And Yazidis are the people that they were tortured during the ISIS a lot. And okay. There are 700,000 Yazidis around the world right now. But the majority of them currently living in Iraq. And okay. it's an ancient faith. And it's considered the extension of matric religion. And they have some elements with Zoroastrianism, Islam, and Christianity. Yeah. You can't convert to Yazidi. You can only be born a Yazidi. And Yazidis can't marry to other religions,
Got it. And you mentioned, just going back for a second to Nowruz, I looked up what the origin of it was, and it's Zoroastrian. So it's originally a Persian New Year. So that makes sense why you would celebrate it at home. And this region, which is fairly close to Iran, then thought that was a pretty cool celebration. So they started doing it too. Excellent.
Yes, many evidence is related to... Sorry, this word is so hard to pronounce. Yes, but still, I think some evidence may suggest that it goes back even before. That's why I said maybe, yes.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a very big celebration, and we call it Persian New Year.
I interrupted you because you were talking about, before we were talking about my ignorance about Yazidism, you were in Lalish.
Yes, Lalish is a town, and it's a holy town for Yazidis. And okay. To visit there, it's better to get a taxi, hire a taxi, because it's not the shared taxi going there.
Okay.
And you can hire the taxi for a day and go to Lalish. When you enter the Lalish, you have to take off your shoes. That's okay. Because it's a holy place. And you have to walk barefoot in the city. And there are temples.
Oh, in the whole city, not just in the temple.
Yes, yeah. Whole city. It's weird, but I respect that and I did it. But because you see, there is a dust and mud, but I should walk there. But that's, they do it and I respect it and I did it. Yeah, you can see the temples and it's a beautiful city apart from, because, we are not Yazidis. We don't know exactly what they are doing. But right. I can say that it's a beautiful city and you can see that. And there is a celebration, but I wasn't there. I think it's in October. There is a celebration of Yazidis happening there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anything else in that area or anything else you want to add to your itinerary here?
I think also Yazidis believe that the Lalish is the place where the creation began. And that's why it's holy for them.
That's why it's a holy city. Got it. That makes sense.
And cool. There is another monastery there, but I couldn't go there because Alghash Monastery is another place in the north that if your base is in Dohuk, you can visit it, but you should consider that it's Kurdistan, as in it is in Iraq. Sometimes they can close the road for the security. At the time I was there, when I reached the security checkpoint, they didn't let us. They said that the foreigner can't go. And unfortunately, I couldn't go there. That one is another historical place for Christianity. But I didn't go there.
And you mentioned security, and obviously this is a question that people are going to be surprised that it took this long for this to come up. This is not the first episode of Amateur Traveler we have done on this region, but it has been over 500 episodes since we've done it, so over 10 years. A lot has happened in 10 years in that area. What did you find in terms of the security right now and the infrastructure for tourism?
Okay, I'm thinking to put it in the right word and say When I planned my trip to Kurdistan, I was quite worried because, you know, I think everyone knows why I was worried and I don't need to explain it. But I was certain that I saw so many people that are traveling there. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that and I should be okay. I did a lot of research. And to be honest, it was safe. And Kurdistan always been this one of the safest parts. Actually, I think the safest part in Iraq, even during the war. I was traveling as a solo female traveler to a region is not known in the world as the safest place in the world. Yeah, am I right? If I, when I was telling people that I'm going alone, everyone was like, are you crazy? Maybe I was crazy. I don't know. But the truth is, when I landed there, the first thing I was like, okay, I landed there midnight. And I was like, oh my God. The first thing I'm going to do, I contacted my hotel and said, just arrange the taxi. But the day after, when I stepped out of my hotel and I walked alone in the city, I was like, oh my God, here it's so normal. It's so, I felt so safe. Even I would say if I walk during the dark in London, I would be more careful. The talk or other thing, you know what I'm saying, that still you get drunk people or what else. But in Erbil, I didn't feel anything. I felt so safe and so protected. Actually, I noticed that people, they are protecting me. And they're welcoming me and they were inviting me for tea, for coffee, for food. When I wanted to pay, they didn't let me to pay. And I never felt unsafe the whole my trip, not just in Erbil, in whole my trip, I would say. And also, when I was talking to locals, I noticed that even locals, they feel safe. Like, they don't like their cars sometimes. I don't think this is the case in many big cities. But, right. Like, for example, we went to a market. They call it money market because there you can exchange any currency, literally any currency there. And the money are actually on the street. And you see them without any security. And you walk. And there were like queues full of money around the street and you just exchange the money. But this won't happen in London. There is a bank with the security. You don't see the money. You know what I'm saying? That's why I think it was really safe. And I travel, like I traveled to north and also I traveled to the south on share taxi. And I never felt unsafe.
Excellent. And the other question then is just in terms of logistics, when I travel any place these days, I don't bring money. I change money at the ATM. I expect that I'd have connections to internet so I could do things like translate or do directions and things like that. Are there things that I need to know before I go to Kurdistan because they're going to surprise me?
For the money, I would say I thought that I couldn't get money there. That's why I borrowed cash with myself. But I didn't bring a lot. But the thing, the first hotel I stayed in, Erbil, it had the ATM inside the hotel. So I got some money. And most of the hotels in Erbil, they accept credit card. And so I didn't have any issue. But when I was going outside the city, the hotel didn't accept the card. So I had to give them cash. And there was ATM at the bank. I could withdraw money. But exchanging the money wasn't a problem at all. You could exchange money almost everywhere in every city.
Okay. And then in terms of internet or those sort of logistics that we're used to and spoiled with these days?
Oh, the internet. That's so easy. Like everywhere you could find the internet. And the first thing I did, usually when I travel to a new country, I get the SIM card, local SIM card. And actually I did the same in Erbil. At Erbil airport, I bought the SIM card. And I had it for the whole my trip. I think it was 11 days and I had it. And the internet was good. I could upload videos and
photos. Upload videos even. Okay.
Yes, on Instagram. I didn't upload anything on YouTube. I don't know like about the big videos, but it worked. And everywhere, actually, many places I was going. I also, actually, when you were talking about the language, I used a lot Google Translate at the time. That helped me a lot. Yeah, I didn't have any issue with internet. And if you go there, you notice that people, no matter what age they are, they use internet. Like Snapchat, it still is a thing there. And it's a big thing. And they use Snapchat a lot. And I'm like, oh, really? Snapchat? I don't have a Snapchat. Like Instagram is a really big thing. Snapchat and Instagram.
Interesting.
And they take photo with you because they want to post it on Snapchat or Instagram.
Excellent. And in terms of itinerary, have we covered the places that you wanted to talk about, or are there other places that you wanted to mention?
No, actually, I want to mention another city that my favorite part of the trip was in Soleimaniye. And it's in the south, closer to Iran. After Duhok, I went back to Erbil and then took a shared taxi to Soleimaniye.
Okay.
I think I mentioned it. Soleimaniye is my favorite place in Kurdistan. Soleimaniye is more modern, more open-minded, and very different from Erbil or Duhok. And for example, in Erbil or Duhok, especially in Duhok, you couldn't see any female traveling alone, like local female. Usually, if you saw females, they were family or a male companion. But in Soleimaniye, it was completely different. You could see female gathering in a coffee shop or walking around the park. Also, they were dressing up more modern, I would say, like more more like us, like in the Western country. Okay. And it was really live. The city was a lively city, very happy city, and people were so welcome too. And I really enjoyed that. I would say like Erbil and north of Kurdistan, they are more influenced by Arab culture. Maybe I enjoy Soleimaniye more because they are more influenced by Persian culture.
Sure, that would make you more at home. Sure.
Yeah, also maybe. Maybe that's all.
Well, and you mentioned conservative and talked about dress. I'm assuming as a woman traveler there, you're bringing a hijab or something like that, but you don't really need anything more than that.
In Kurdistan, you don't need hijab to wear hijab.
You don't even need the hijab.
T-shirt or trousers is fine. Also, you can wear like a skirt as long as it's not mini skirt, as long as you don't show your knees. And it's fine. I would say that as long as you dress up modestly, and the dress is not very open, then it's fine.
Okay. And then for men also, I would assume you usually wouldn't show your knees or your shoulders.
Yes, I would say that. Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen that. No, I haven't seen. Maybe in Soleimaniye you could see, but not in other parts, no.
Well, that's true in so many places in the world that it's just a little more conservative. And if you want to fit in, that's something you need to know.
Yeah, and also when I was there, it wasn't really hot, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you were there the first part of spring. And then obviously for the Persian New Year celebration, you would recommend that was a great time to go, but you said it was also crowded on the road. So is there a better time to go?
I would say it's a great time to go to see the celebration. And also when you go to nature, you see the families and you see the Kurdish people dancing, which is something unique, and you should do that. But also give it more time because some shops and most of the cities where they are on holiday, some shops are closed and for 4 or 5 days. I think the official holiday is 3 days, but the Kurdish people, they continue celebrating as long as they can. This is what I've been told, and I saw it. Like I was like, oh my God, the 3 days is finished. So now everything is open, but it wasn't like this. Like they continue because the weather is so great at the time. Because I don't recommend going there during the summer, like July and August, because it's so hot. And winter can be rough too. So spring and autumn is a great time to explore the Kurdish region. So, yeah.
Excellent. And while you were in Soleimaniye, named after the sultan of the same name, so this is an Ottoman city originally, what else did you do? Or the things that you want to recommend that we see while we're there?
In Soleimaniye, what I've done mostly, I was eating a lot.
We haven't talked about the food yet, and I'm surprised we got this far in. So as we're talking about the food in Kurdistan, you said that it was great and meat-based, but what kind of dishes or what kind of restaurants are you going to recommend for us?
In Kurdistan, that what is so famous is tea, like more than food. Wherever you go, you can find tea houses. I highly recommend you, if you are going to Kurdistan, just try the traditional tea houses. Don't go to the modern cafe or tea houses. Just go to the traditional one. Usually, like in Erbil, you see the in the traditional tea houses are mostly men. But I was brave enough. I was like, I'm a solo female. I go there. And actually, I had a really great conversation with some of the men there. I didn't feel uncomfortable at all. For example, they were telling me that they were fighting, some of them, they were fighting ISIS during the war. And they were telling me that they lost their son or their brothers or something. Mm-hmm. I've been told so many great stories. And one of my taxi drivers there, he told me he actually killed 5 members of ISIS, Daesh. So tea houses is a great place to go. And
if you want to meet the locals, okay.
Yeah, meet the locals. And also the tea there is delicious. Believe me. There is no milk in the tea, but the tea is really delicious. They have different type of teas. I don't exactly know the name of the tea, but one is the black, similar to English tea. But the other one was so tasty. It was like sour and bitter. I think it's made with dry lemon. It was so delicious. And the rest, I would say, in Soleimani is a great place for food lovers. And I usually don't talk a lot about food, but in Kurdistan and in Soleimani it was different because there are a lot of street food, I would say. You don't need to go to a restaurant. There are like the main high street in Soleimani during the night, a converted street food market. Every night it converted to a food market, which is great. And you can walk along and just buy this sample of any dish you want to eat. And usually they give you to try before ordering it. And yeah, there are so many different dishes that you can try there.
Did you have a favorite?
I tried something I really love, but I don't know exactly what was it because of the language barrier. I couldn't really I couldn't figure out what was it. I was jumping out. I want this. And he was like, I was saying, this has meat. And he was like, this has beef. I think then I was like, okay, I will try it and I will guess what it has. It looked like a meatball, but it didn't taste just like meat. It was meat with some herbs and probably some vegetable. It was so delicious. And oh yeah, that was my favorite. I wish I could talk to them and at least ask what was it. Then I Google it and find the recipe.
Excellent.
And one thing I think I forgot to mention it and it's interesting that many people think that, okay, in Kurdistan is a conservative place and you can't drink alcohol. But actually, yes, in Iraq you can drink alcohol, but in Kurdistan you can find alcohol almost everywhere. In Erbil and Duhok, there are specific places you don't see them often, but in Soleimani there are big shops that you can buy alcohol. And one of the best wines I ever had, I had it in a restaurant in Soleimani. It was a French wine. And it was so delicious. And it was so cheap.
Excellent. Anything else you want to talk about Soleimani?
In Soleimani, there is another thing that I would recommend people to see is the former prison during the Saddam Hussein that now is a museum that show how Saddam tortured Kurdish people. And that museum is interesting to see. To learn about the history. It's not a happy place, definitely, but when you travel to Kurdistan, and I guess everyone should know about the history of the region and the Kurdish people, they suffer a lot throughout the history in general.
Excellent. Anything else we want to talk about in terms of your itinerary, or shall we start to get to some of our wrap-up questions?
I think I cover everything, Soleimani, Duhok, Erbil, Lalish, and monastery that I couldn't visit, These are the main places.
Anything else you think that people should know before they go to Kurdistan?
I guess I covered everything. Oh yes. One thing about the booking accommodation. I would say. Before going to Kurdistan, I tried to book my hotel in Erbil. And it was on booking.com. But during my trip, when I was changing location, I tried to book while I was moving. And it was so easy, but then I realized that not all the hotels online. They have website order on booking.com. There are few hotels. And I noticed that many travelers, they just walk into the hotels and they book it. And they get the better deal. And usually they have room. And it's not all, it's fully booked. That's another tip that I would say.
Excellent. As we get to some of our wrap-up questions, you're standing in the prettiest spot in Kurdistan. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
That's so hard to answer this question because I have two spots I want to stand there. One is top of the mountain in Acre.
Okay.
And look at the valley and the houses in the valley. So beautiful, that area. And the other one is at the top of the mountain out of Soleimaniye and looking at the mountains, surrounding mountains, and the city.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Kurdistan.
Okay. You made me laugh even thinking about that, even by thinking about that. I mentioned that when we like try to buy tea or something, they didn't let us to pay. Many times happened. Like once I was with another traveler, he was Italian, in Soleimaniye, and we bought food, something, and we started eating in the street, and a guy came to us and said, oh, you're a tourist or something. We couldn't really talk because he couldn't speak English, but we noticed that he's just saying that, okay, you're a traveler, you're a guest, and said he gave the money to the shop owner and said, okay, I pay for their food. But we said, we already paid. And he tried to give the money to us. I was like, we don't accept your money. We already paid. And we were like arguing that we can't accept your money. Buy us another thing, but we can't accept your money. That was so the conversation went on for 10 minutes that to convince him that we can't get your money. It doesn't make sense.
And if you had to summarize the region in just three words, what three words would you use?
Beautiful.
Okay.
Friendliest people.
Okay, I'm going to let you get by with that as a one.
And I would say great food.
Excellent. Our guest again is Mansura Farahani from travelwithmansura.com. And if we wanted to send people to your website to your best post there on the region, where are we going to send them to? Or are we going to send them to YouTube to your best video? Either one.
I would say just go to my YouTube and watch Acre Nowruz Celebration.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes so that people can find it easily. Mansura, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Kurdistan.
Thank you so much for having me.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. Patrons get the show ad-free and also just a little early. They get a monthly Zoom call and also some tchotchkes depending on what level they sign up for. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And a special thanks to Emily Robbins, who is the latest patron of the show. And this review that I got last month made me laugh. It says, love it. Very informative as a travel agent to listen to. My one-year-old daughter loves your theme song also. Ha. From Kate0748 via Apple Podcasts. And thanks so much, Kate and Kate's daughter. I heard recently from Kenneth, who said, I have an upcoming trips to Basilicata and Calabria regions of Italy in September with a day in Rome where we'll visit the Colosseum. Have you done any podcasts on the villages in Basilicata and Calabria? And I have not. And so if there's somebody out there who can be an authoritative guest on those regions, please feel free to pitch me coming on the show. And then I heard from Jeff Ulfs, former guest and perpetual commentator on Amateur Traveler. Happy 17th. Indeed, the 17th anniversary of Amateur Traveler was July 2nd, 2022. Thanks, Jeff. And Jeff says, yes, I have listened to every podcast at least once. I do enjoy them. Here's to the next 17. a very loyal listener without trying to be a stalker, Jeff. 17, I don't know. I don't know if I can commit to 17 more years, but I'm hoping to do another 10 at least. 17 years from now, I'll be in my late 70s, and at some point, I will stop traveling, and you just have to realize that we can only travel for so much time before we can't, and I have no idea when that will be for me, so we'll see. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, and thanks so much for listening.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.